This is a previously recorded episode.
You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Creativity Wasted is a podcast where a group of creative people get together and we each share an idea that we're not planning on pursuing in real life, such as an invention idea that's outside of our area of expertise, a futuristic sci-fi movie idea, or an evil prank idea. And rather than just letting the idea quietly slip away, we get some fun out of it by joking about it together. I'm comedian Mike Jeter.
Gus Nassar.
I'm Marie.
And I'm Tom Walma, your host. This is Creativity Wasted. So this is a special episode. Normally, each of my guests bring an idea, and we go around, and we each talk about their idea. But this is a special episode for one of my bigger ideas, so we're just going to talk about my idea the whole time, about teaching. And I have my friend and his fiance, who didn't want to use her real name, which is embarrassing for me. And she's a teacher. And then hopefully we'll get some interesting feedback here about my idea. So, and you guys can jump in at any time. So there's a lot of problems with the current educational system. So the performance of American, I'm thinking high school, not college, like high school, K through 12 education. There's a lot of problems with it. Our performance compared to other countries is getting worse. It's sort of biased against poor people and minorities because rich people can afford to take their kids to private schools and they get better teachers, better education overall. It punishes people who aren't born on the right time of year. There's been studies that kids, depending on how old they are, depending on what time of year they're born, learn better, and they also do better in athletics, depending on what time of year they're born. So that's a problem.
Are you talking like setting back a year rather than going with a class ahead because they're at that cusp, or?
The fact that there is a cusp. So some kid might be 9 months ahead in his mental development because he happened to be born after the cutoff, so he's older in September, whenever the school year starts. He happens to be 9 months older than a kid who was born right on the other side of the cusp.
Sure.
It's expensive. Taxpayers don't want to pay enough to make it good and to make it stable. If you guys have any comments, you can jump in. Any new thing?
I'm curious what your idea is.
I'm actually getting to it really slow.
I see that.
There's a problem with unions and not being able to fire bad teachers. The last problem that I was going to talk about is not keeping up with modern technology. A friend of mine just moved his kids from one school to the other, and now all of his kids now have iPads instead of books. But I guess a lot of schools still don't have, maybe not iPads, but tablets or laptops of some sort. Hmm. A lot of kids are still using books.
See, that's contestable. I mean, and we grew up on books. Paper, yeah. Pencils, overhead projectors.
Yeah, but we also didn't date by swiping left or right either, so, you know.
So they're finally getting rid of teaching cursive, which I think is a good thing. So they're updating. It's not really used. They're starting to phase out obsolete things.
Cursive?
Books?
Yes.
Books in cursive.
Kids can't read cursive anymore.
Really?
No. You write it on the board and they have no idea what it says.
So why not make them learn it?
That's what I do.
Whoa.
Figure it out.
That's a free thought right there.
I'm just saying, man. I'm no Einstein.
When I was a kid, actually, I needed glasses, but I was too proud to admit that I needed glasses. Oh. I could barely read the board. And I could figure it out. I could stare at it for like And gradually, over the course of the entire hour, I could figure out what they've written on the board.
Yeah, it's so, a good skill. You know, problem solving, see what letter you don't know, figure it out.
If I could do that, you'd think kids could do that with cursive.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, you have to sign, eventually learn how to sign checks and things of that matter. You know, when they, like, what are they going to do? Get rid of signatures and just have them.
They don't even look at that, you know, signature on the
block
check.
Letter writing. It's
just a fake safe thing, like airport security.
It's
just to make people feel safe. No. It doesn't even really matter.
Or like oxygen masks on an airplane when it's going down. It's just like you're going down. Suck on this oxygen, right? Clear it.
You'll be able to breathe for the few minutes you need.
I think that's useful. But
you think that part is useful, but
that's not a fake thing.
Pressure change thing.
I happen to like oxygen personally.
Right.
So the other example of outdated technology to me is music class. And I've thought this since I was a kid, and I wanted to play guitar or drums, like not like marching band drums, but like important real rock drums, you know, like useful.
Like a drum kit.
Music classes. And I thought it was so stupid that they would teach kids marching band and like jazz. I read that they teach people jazz too. So marching band and jazz are the primary types of music education in the United States for school kids.
Yeah, but without marching band and teaching kids marching band, you wouldn't have the band kid. We all knew the band kid.
Well,
it's true.
So
where would they go?
I'll tell you where they'll go.
Because play video games.
I read an article on the internet about the Swedish music explosion.
And ABBA?
EDM?
Well, yes, and more. But so if you Google why is Sweden so good at pop music, basically since like 2012, over half of all top 10 pop songs have been written by Swedes. There's one guy, I think his name is Max Martin, who's a Swede, who writes most of the songs by about half of the hits by like Katy Perry, Kelly Clarkson, Taylor Swift, Ariana Grande. Almost all of those hits are written by him and other Swedes. And okay. A lot of...
Can I ask you, who are they?
They're all the famous Katy Perry. Like they're all famous pop stars.
Okay.
I guess if you're in... I guess there's not a Swedish rap explosion.
Right. I'm just saying. There's no Swedish Eminem or, you know...
Avicii is Swedish.
Put him in Eminem's category. He's more on the EDM side.
Yeah. He's like an EDM slash rap, right? Or he combines EDM and country or something. He has a weird mix of things. I don't know. I don't listen to that. But
how do we let that happen?
So Sweden is the third leading music exporter in the world behind the United States and the United Kingdom, even though their population is really a lot smaller. And the reason is because, according to this article... 30% of high school students take after-school music programs, and they're given a specific music track, like pop, rock, classical, or mixing/recording. So they teach them relevant music, and so...
Did you just call pop music relevant?
Compared to marching band, it's relevant.
Well, I mean, like, you are getting the basic skills of playing, like, a reed instrument out of marching band. On the other hand, who can play an instrument when you're doing just EDM?
It's not all just EDM. Okay. It's pop in general. And there's rock music tracks. You know that actually they're from Finland, maybe, the rock bands that I like that were on the Jackass TV show. Some of them, I think, are from Sweden. Some
and
of them.
I'm not saying
so. They
isn't
have a
any.
Good rock scene too. Yeah,
but I mean, some of those other artists, like I don't know, Ariana Grande. Does she play music or does she just sing?
She's the singer, but everything else is done by the Swedes. She's like a figurehead, like a pretty voice.
Right.
She's the pretty singing voice, so then, right?
Yeah. Whatever, it's all just the real talent, the writing, recording,
absolutely
instrumentals is all done by Swedes. And so why can't we do that here? I mean, yeah, you learn some basic skills, but you know what would be better than using learning basic skills that can sort of be applied to something useful? Learning useful skills in the first place. So you make all these people make all these excuses for like why these outdated things are still good. Oh, you can kind of use this skill for something useful. Well, why not just go straight, zoom in on the useful thing rather than making excuses for some outdated thing.
But didn't you say that the music program was after school? Didn't you say it was like
it's still funded by the government. They have like 50% taxes, and they're like one of those countries. So it's after school technically, but I think it's still funded by the government and grants and stuff.
Okay. All right, so your idea is to get rid of marching band-esque type music and just focus on learning how
to
play.
That's just a side thing.
Okay.
My idea involves the whole educational system.
Okay, I'm sorry. Carry on.
Replace them all with Taylor Swift's. Hundreds of Taylor Swift's.
Oh, yeah.
All around the place.
And hopefully they'll sell bullets to go in the guns and put it in my head.
I don't think they have guns in Sweden.
No, actually, I think they took them away.
Probably because of that reason.
They all just got lost.
Now
in
we
the
can
snow
teach them pop music. And they're like, Pete.
So I wanted to, before I even get to the idea, so there's been a lot of bad ways to fix schools. And so the government, they try to give different amounts of funding to school based on performance. But there's lots of problems with that because basically involved that the students aren't a random sampling of students. They're typically of a certain racial background or income background. And so that skews the statistics so much, it's really hard to tell what school is performing good under those conditions versus – it's hard to separate the signal from the noise.
There's too many outside factors beyond the school, home life and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and I never thought it made sense even as a kid that they would fund the school as a whole based on the performance of the school. Because basically every classroom, the teacher, it's kind of like an independent fiefdom kingdom. Like they have a lesson plan. They're going to do it. Their lesson plan isn't going to all of a sudden change drastically because the school got 20% less funding or more funding or whatever. So changing the funding of the school as a whole is sort of not tackling the problem head on. It's sort of trying to... Again, like the band example, it's like they're not hitting they're not going straight for the bullseye. They're just tackling things around the edges. They're not getting to the core of the issues and getting to the core of making useful education. I didn't explain that very well. Go ahead.
So you're saying that the fact that they have money is just one of many other issues outside of what makes school successful or not?
Yes.
Okay.
And you're also saying that the government types.
The No Child Left Behind and all the things, they never really work because it's not a rational way to look at the problem. There's bad statistics. It doesn't focus on individual teachers and individual lessons, even if you do change the amount of money in an effective way. It doesn't really help.
And you're also saying that the government types who went out and chose the easiest path, which happens to not be the right path, did that. They're the ones who didn't want to do the work to figure out an actual solution that would work. It's government. What do you expect? They're not going to try.
Yeah. And so another thing that I think sometimes happens is they'll vary the teacher's salary based on performance.
Boo.
That's true, right? That's a real thing, right?
Yes.
It's been done.
Not in this state, but it does happen in other districts. You get like merit pay if your kids do really well or if you like meet highly qualified or that type of thing.
Oh.
But yeah, generally
so as a teacher, your salary is based upon what this kid, 6, 7, 8-year-old kid does?
Oh, absolutely.
Or how well they do?
Oh, absolutely. Your whole
that
job.
Sucks.
Oh, yeah.
So basically what you need
Thank
to
God
do,
parenting isn't like that.
So you need to get him to drop out.
Work.
You need to get the kid to drop out to adjust your stats to make more money.
You know, well, I think the school fails them, but that is a good – I will keep that in mind. Like,
but, yeah, there's all sorts of problems with that. Again, the sample size for statistics is really small, and it's not random, and same problems involved in that. And then there's private and charter schools. They try to fix education that way. And basically, they sometimes do better. I saw a John Oliver thing that sometimes they're horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes they poach the good teachers, which – because they have more money because the rich people are paying more. So it doesn't really improve the educational system as a whole to poach teachers.
No, and charter schools can pull kids. Like, you have to qualify to get into a charter school.
That is true.
And so it's a self-selecting population where it pulls the kids whose parents are really invested and all that kind of stuff.
Okay, and then my last point about bad ways to fix schools. A lot of what parents focus on is pseudoscience. Like, they care way too much about classroom size.
Oh, that's absolutely a thing.
Well, obviously, if it's huge, if there's 50 kids, there are going to be too many. But according to I think I read a Freakonomics article that there's a good – if the class is too small, it's not good either. There's a good
– that's definitely true.
Midpoint of like 20 to 25 kids. So
I've had classes where it's so small, I'll ask a question and the science teacher feeds insects to one of the crickets, to one of their – animals, and one had gotten out and was in my room, and there was 8 kids in the class, and it was I asked a question and no one knew the answer, and then literally this cricket started going off. It's like, seriously, this is happening right now, crickets.
Yeah, that's not good if you're a comedian either. So you know. Not that that's ever happened to me.
Well, they have that
very
show.
Funny.
I haven't done this show, but they have that show at the recycling center. I think it's outside, right?
Chucky Fenster.
Yeah. Do they hear crickets?
I don't know. I've never done
it. If it's outside, I would bet they would.
I'm pretty sure they would.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that they would. So,
visual learning versus book learning. That's a thing that a lot of parents, it's a trend. Like, oh, my kid's not a book learner. He's a visual learner.
That's not a thing anymore.
Okay, so that's a dead thing. Yeah,
it's still like people still say like I can't learn like this, and usually our response now is like, yeah, you can suck it up, add up.
But yeah, so I'm still working up towards the idea.
I'm really curious what your grand idea to fix education is.
It's going
to
come in like the last 5 minutes of the show, and then
and our time's up. Thank
now
God.
Solve it.
So basically. What is a teacher, if you think about it? So a teacher has a few separate – I'm going to separate it into a few job roles. Excuse me. One of them is a classroom monitor. So my totally blind, out-of-nowhere guess is that a quarter of the time a teacher spends is watching kids read or do their assignment or taking attendance or watching them take a test, basically sitting idle and being a monitor, like maybe you can double up and do other work while they're taking in tests. Like,
sometimes, a lot of times, if the kids are working, you're like circulating and helping, so you're not just watching. Even during a test, you're answering questions. Like, I don't sit down when
I. So you're helping them cheat, is what you're saying?
No, not helping them
gotta
cheat.
Get those numbers up.
Yeah, exactly. My pay is based on that. No, I don't help kids cheat. But you're walking around and you're helping kids and you're like, oh, think about this question this way. And like, oh, you know this. You just need to focus on this. There is a little bit of just monitoring. But usually if I'm giving kids work time, it's because half the kids won't do their homework at home. And so I need to get them working on it in school, or only the kids with parents who make them do their homework are going to start doing homework and start practicing the skill.
Okay.
But yeah, so, probably 25%. You are just that might. I don't know.
Instead of actively teaching, you are doing more monitoring type stuff.
Yeah, instead of actually being in front of the classroom.
Sure.
So, okay, the second role is actually doing the teaching, giving the lesson, writing things on a. Do you still have chalkboards or whiteboards?
Hell no, we don't have chalkboards. I hate that stuff.
Whiteboards?
We have whiteboards, and mostly I use my document camera to projector. Okay. Like an Epson projector that projects onto my whiteboard.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Technology, man.
And, you know, no one expects you to.
We had sticks and stones.
Right?
Didn't somebody claim that like chalk causes cancer or something?
Sure. If that means I never have a chalkboard again, yes, chalk causes cancer.
Chalk causes cancer.
Yeah, and by the way, nobody expects y'all to do your jobs with technology from 1990 when we all went to high school.
Just saying.
So
chalk
never
fails.
So, and as far as teaching, there's sort of two different roles there. One is actually giving the lesson in that it's like a mostly uninterrupted thing.
No.
And then.
Sorry.
Okay. I might be wrong on this, but there's a period where you're explaining something and then afterwards, usually kids ask questions. Although, yeah, I suppose they can interrupt it.
Yeah.
And I guess it depends too on the individual teacher and whether they tolerate that type of thing.
Well, they even tolerate it. Encourage it. Try this. We'll do it.
And then, so then there's tutoring, which is how I define the after the lesson part, which could be during the actual class or during a study hall period, whatever.
So yeah, lunches after school, that type of thing.
It's more one-on-one or group thing.
Yeah.
Answering questions that an individual kid has. Okay, so my idea, finally, is...
I was going to say, drum roll, please.
Yeah.
Okay, first you fire all the teachers.
Hey, now.
What?
And replace them with robots.
So no. I divided the task the teacher does. The first one was a classroom monitor. You don't need a high-paid person with a college degree and 50 grand student loan debt to be a classroom monitor. You could pay somebody like $10 an hour, give them like a one-week training course, do a background check to make sure they're not a creepo.
That's key, yeah. Can I just interject, though, that classroom monitoring and getting kids to behave is arguably the hardest part of my job. Because you can know and understand how people learn things, but it's a totally different thing to get that kid to stop being a jerk to you, essentially. That's a whole other – that's a skill.
I'm not saying it's not a skill. It's not a skill that needs
– college education?
Yeah. So then the – I'm going to go to the third role, tutoring. So that would be where I would put the good teachers. You would have full-time tutors. That's pretty much it. So they would make about as much money as a teacher used to make. They would still be fully college educated, whatever.
What is a classroom size in that case? Are you talking one-on-one when you say tutors, or are you adding it
like
five
a study
one?
Hall period? So I'm picturing, 15? Again, the school could do whatever they wanted, but I'm picturing like a group of kids in a library, and then there's like five or six tutors just sort of roaming around answering questions. So it's not – they're one-on-one, but they're not like – so there's like 50 kids and five tutors roaming around so that –
So classroom size now is 10 to 1.
For that one study hall period.
For the study hall period.
Just compared, okay.
Right. Okay. And then for giving the lessons, this is where my idea comes in. Replace the teacher with a multimedia-based teaching system, and I call it Teacher Die. And that's based on – the name is based on Funny or Die, the comedic website. So basically, the whole point of the teaching system is the teaching materials that aren't successful will be discarded, leaving the most successful ones to be taught the next semester. So you would have this big, like nationwide or large group of schools, and you'd have a bunch of different companies or individuals all making lessons for the same exact subject matter. And then there would be a standardized test for that, and you'd compare the results that the kids had from this one company A versus company B, and then based on how well they did, that's how you would pay the company more based on how well they did, the kids did, and then you would reuse it with a larger, the next semester or next group of kids would a higher percentage of them would be taught using the more successful lesson.
So is the idea to pare it down to one lesson that is the most successful and then use that going forward for all children?
You'd never pare it down.
Versus, you know, versus constantly having two competing companies, you know, like an AT&T and Verizon type of thing, where they're essentially teaching the same thing, but one might have a better better scores or a better output than the other. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but you would never pare it down. You would always have
competition.
So you'd never have like one do more than like 70% of the total country. So there would always be upcomers rising, trying to take their territory for that individual lesson, and they would all be treated individually. Like there wouldn't be like a company name like Verizon or whatever.
Right.
You wouldn't, if one Verizon lesson for Algebra 1 for this topic, like fractions, or I guess that's not algebra. I don't know. I don't know what algebra is, actually.
Algebra is like y equals 2x plus b. Right. It's linear.
But whatever, equations. Whatever lesson it is, they might be successful, super successful in one topic and not successful in another topic. And you wouldn't bias your opinion based on how successful they were in another topic. So it would allow these small startups. You could have like a teacher or former teacher who got fired because of my system. They could be like a uber genius at teaching this one small topic, and they could just hold reign supreme over that topic for 20 years and just keep raking in more money.
Yeah, I was going to ask, who's writing all of these lessons from you fired all right. the teachers?
So you're firing the teachers, but you're creating a whole industry. So there'll be companies that will – there'll be some big companies and there'll be individuals. Some of the big companies that they'll be doing, like, they'll have these like scientific theories from professors, like this is how people learn. So they'll put those to the test.
So let's take this from the other side of things for a moment here. If you were a parent and you were going to send your kids to these schools and you knew that school number A over there has a 70%, the one that was predominant last year. And you know school number B over there is one of the alternative schools, which is starting to grow. But you're not 100% sure whether that the lesson that they're doing is good or the lesson that other school is doing is good. But everybody seems to go to the other school, and it seems to be pretty successful. Why would you ever send your kids to this riskier school?
All of the lessons are random. Like the school might get a Verizon lesson for this topic, but some other startup lesson written by a teacher for some other lesson, and it'll all be distributed randomly based on like a lottery system. So there's not like one school that's getting the more vetted lessons and the other schools aren't. Everybody's getting the same mix of random lessons.
Just from different sources, different companies are making yeah. like this company might be better at geometry. This one might be better at trig. This one might be better at algebra. So that's three different companies, but one school would get a lesson plan from each of those companies based upon whatever the highest score is, their best scores in those particular subjects.
But the lessons won't be a whole class. It'll be like a day or like a lesson would be like a topic, a small topic from like 1 day to 2 weeks, depending on what makes sense. So So basically, even within a class, there would be different companies teaching it over the course of right. the 3 months. Like you divide like fractions is one thing, and then long division is another thing. So you just jump from lesson. So a class is like composed of like 20 to 30 lessons, and each one of them would be randomized and taught by a different company.
But okay. You don't – I mean – like in a math class, right? You do one lesson, you move on to the next subject, and you keep going through. How do you interject new companies to see whether their lessons are better?
Like, you test them. So there would be some initial vetting process. And then you would teach them to some kids and then see what the test results are. And okay, the test results for this random – And they would be sort of a big random thing across multiple schools. So you would take out the poverty and race and gender differences. All of that would just melt away. It would be a totally random sample.
Wait, why would all the poverty and all that melt away?
It wouldn't affect the statistics because it's not – if you would have like 5,000 students amongst 30 schools taking this one test by this one company. It wouldn't be one school.
Right, but the –
it's all poor kids.
So my – the school I teach at has a wide variety of students who are very, very wealthy. Their parents are professors. They have vacation homes in Europe. And another big portion of my school who are on free and reduced lunch, which means that they their parents are below the poverty level and they don't have to pay for lunch. So I have both of those in that same school, which means they are getting the same teachers. They're getting the same environment. Everything is the same except what their home life is like. So this idea that it's going to melt away because the
– Well, it's not going to solve the problems of the home life, but it's that those problems aren't going to skew the statistics and ruin somebody's education and help somebody else's education.
Oh, so you're saying the lessons, the quality of the teachers would be all the same regardless.
Yes, it would even out. It would provide a statistically randomized to a degree of statistical relevance. It'd be good data. It wouldn't be bad data like all the No Child Left Behind and grading the school and trying to weed out how well they did based on even though half of the kids are in poverty in this one school and trying to do math tricks to weed that out of the statistical data to figure out who's doing good and who's doing bad. My system, it's implicit in the system that it weeds it out all of the noise from the signal.
So I can see how in very low income areas, maybe a whole city that's a very low income city, this could raise the quality of learning for across the board that way. But at the same time, I think you're also lowering the quality of learning in some of the areas that have very creative and very skilled teachers, because I find that most of the teachers that are really good at their jobs don't teach on a level playing field. They actually can find where the weakness is in the student and hone in on that weakness and then teach in a different way, in a mm-hmm. in a more focus to that student. So now what we're doing is we're erasing that focus. And
The tutor still does that.
Well, yep. The tutor's doing 10 kids.
Well, the tutor isn't part of my system. The tutor is something run independent of my system. My system is the teacher die teaching materials.
Sure.
Okay, but even with that, with the tutors stepping in and doing whatever their role is, they still have to have that interaction with that kid to understand and get a vibe for how that kid learns, how that kid reacts to certain situations versus just sitting in a study hall waiting for a group of kids to come in and them raising their hands. You know what I mean? Because that kid might ask a question on one particular thing with that tutor that can help them out with. But as time goes on, that kid and you say that the outside environs don't affect what they do in school. Well, it has to. It has to. Whether or not they're getting enough sleep, whether or not they're able to learn when they're out, when they're away from home, what are they learning? What are they doing outside of school? And I only say this because I come from a large family. I'm one of 17 kids. So there was constantly noise. And we were dirt poor, and there was constantly noise. But I graduated 17th in my class, and I went to Cornell. So
I just want to interject that is insanely impressive, Cornell and 17th in your class.
You know what? And that's the whole thing. It's I know that it was hard for me to study at home. So I studied at my friend's house. I stayed at school later. I went to school early, especially in high school. I was at school at 6 o'clock, and school started at 7:30. But I went there because it was difficult for me to find the time, to carve out the time to learn. Now, I'll also say that I have a very photographic memory. So I never had homework. I did everything in my classroom, but I can visualize the question and the teacher writing it on a board and all that other stuff. That doesn't apply when it comes to reading in English, because when you can read it and you can read it over and over again, but to get the understanding, you need quiet and calm and everything. And I didn't always have that. So that's where I'm having a little disconnect with the system. The system seems too regimented. It seems too formulaic when there are all kinds of variables that's added to a kid's education, a child's education. And to have a bunch of teachers waiting in a room for a bunch of kids to come in to answer questions, that's cool and all if they have issues with one or two things. But if they're having problems in math consistently across the board, now that tutor is going to have to spend a lot of time with that kid mm-hmm. on a continual basis. So them sitting in a room to learn is one thing. Outside of that room, that's why I'm kind of like, gilla, gilla. You know, it just kind of gets weird, you know. Yeah.
So one of the things I thought was, well, you're freeing up a lot of money because
where's that money going to go?
Yeah, so you could use it for other things. One of the things I thought, well, you could have like full-time psychologists to help with the troubled kids like on campus. You could have more after-school programs, which might help more after-school study type things and tutoring and whatever. So there's that.
We've all had – everyone has a good story about a truly horrible teacher that they had. I mean, everyone's got one because some people are bad at their jobs. But doesn't everybody have a story of like an awesome teacher who really inspired you?
All of my teachers were super awesome. I didn't have any – honest to God. All of my teachers from elementary until I graduated high school. But my attitude was I didn't go to school to get in trouble. I treated school like it was my job. I took a briefcase to school in high school. Oh. I was such a blurred. I was the coolest blurred on the planet. That was me because I treated it. That was my job. But I also knew that my parents couldn't afford to pay for me to go to college. And I also knew that if I screwed up in school, Sam and Rosie Jeter would come down with thunder and lightning from both sides and knock me out. And I also had little brothers and sisters behind me. I didn't want them to see me screw up. So I was a gold star kid from kindergarten through, you know,
I want to say
through high school.
I love the kids whose parents where all you have to say is, "I'm going to call home." And that kid is perfect from that day out. I love your parents.
I had several examples of what not to do. And I'm like, I'm just not going to do that.
Oh, yeah.
So I had a pretty easy time in school. But there were kids. I have a buddy. It was just he and his sister. And he couldn't get it. Didn't bother to get it. And I've known this kid since I was in third grade. It was difficult for him to capture that. So all the tutoring and the attention in the world, and especially in that situation, his parents were on him. And he just didn't mean anything to him. So that's what I'm saying. Again, the outside environs, it didn't matter what his parents did. He just didn't care.
Okay. There's not much you can do about that. But as far as the having the good teacher, you can have a tutor also that you sort of love and you remember as an adult. So that doesn't go away.
Right.
Yeah, but someone who's helping you learn something is different than someone who is teaching you the content, because I always go with the idea that, like, enthusiasm is extremely contagious. And if I pass out a quiz, am I excited about the quiz? Like, here you go, guys. I'm so – you know, you're going to do really well. Like, kids do better on that quiz.
The monitor can also have enthusiasm.
I think you're right.
Unskilled monitor.
But something we're forgetting about here is, like, trust. I mean, when you spend an entire year with somebody, you learn who they are. You get close to them. You start to trust them. And it's not just the teacher. It's they become a friend sometimes. Mm-hmm. And then you start confiding. And I get it. You can have the tutors do that too.
Yeah.
But that means that everybody has to come back to the exact same place at the exact same time with the exact tutor. But then what are we changing here? Aren't we going right back to the classroom?
Your idea seems kind of...
I missed a couple things. Let me try to...
All right, go ahead.
Sure, yeah. Sorry.
Basically, I don't know how I missed this, but basically what a teacher does, in my opinion, they have a lesson plan, and it's usually written by some publishing company.
My lesson plans are written mostly by me.
Well, you teach a weird subject. I don't want to get into that.
Yeah.
So basically, the job that the teacher does is takes that lesson plan trims it down because most textbooks have a ridiculously huge amount of stuff in them. Like if you were to assign like every problem at the end of the chapter to a kid, his head would explode. It would take him like 2 days to.
No, textbooks are kind of terrible.
So there's a mismatch between the textbook and the class. So that'll go away in my system. So that's.
Wait, why will it go away in your system?
Because there is no textbook.
So where are kids getting content from?
Well, the companies you mentioned earlier.
Just lectures?
No.
Like so basically it's multimedia. So it could be – and the company can choose whatever multimedia they think fits the lesson. So it can be a lecture projected on the wall. It can be reading material on their tablet. It can be an interactive web page. It can be graphics.
So
it can be whatever they want. It can be taught by Neil deGrasse Tyson or some scientist, science – speaker or some celebrity or a comedian or a good teacher. It can be taught by like using some teaching philosophy that's new that some Stanford professor came up with. All of it is just – it's going to compete against another company for that same lesson. So
what you're describing is my classroom most days. I think in the past week I've watched 3 YouTube clips. I have made videos to show kids. We do some textbook reading. That's a lot of what teachers are doing now.
Yeah. So I'm doing a scientific analysis of the test results with a large sample. You can't have a scientifically valid sample size
with just my classroom.
With just your classroom, no matter how good of a teacher you are.
Oh, I am an excellent teacher. Thank you.
So, backpack. But basically, what most teachers do, so they have the lesson plan, they're trimming stuff out, and then they're basically improvising a lesson. And their improvisations are error-prone. They're writing things on the board. They're getting math problems wrong. They're skipping important details maybe. And so all of that will be weeded out in my system because these companies, before they do the release the lesson – They could have like sample test group of kids. They could have people whose only job is to search the teaching materials from the other companies and try to find weak lessons that they think they can out teach. So there could be this whole infrastructure, and also there's continual improvement. So if the test does bad, the next time they teach it, it'll be taught to a smaller sample of kids because some other lesson is starting to overtake it in percentage of where it's being taught. So they can try to improve it and weed out errors. And like if the kids had common questions or they got a certain question wrong in the lesson, so the next semester when they teach it to a different set of kids, it'll be improved. So not only is there scientific analysis of the test results and competition, there's also continual improvement, and it's built into the system, and it's fast improvement compared to like textbooks. Like they have a release one, release two, which comes like 5 or 10 years later, and it corrects some of the errors. But this is like semester or year basis, and I even thought, well, if the size was big enough, you could have divide the kids into different groups that they have school at different years depending on their birthday. So there could be a group of students who's taking the lesson in the fall and then a different group that's taking it in the winter. And then there's a different group taking it in the spring. And so at every iteration, the company would get feedback of which kids got which questions wrong, how well it did compared to the other companies. And they would get a chance to improve it. So it would just keep getting better and better and better and better over time.
Now, would this be on a per school basis or a national ranking, like the schools in Michigan versus the schools in Ohio?
It would all be random.
Okay. National?
It would be national or as much as national as I could get it.
So let's take the continual improvement about students. And how do you solve the problem where a student just misses a lesson? But the next lesson is going to build off of it.
That's another interesting thing is that the way a traditional teacher is taught. So you give a lecture or a presentation And if the kid misses it, it's gone. It's out in the ether. It's
They don't double back.
Don't record it.
Right. So, I do.
Oh, you do?
I do, yeah. I record half my lessons I record and post online, and then the kids have to rewatch it.
You should just ask her because she's doing your whole thing. No, I'm just kidding. She already has your plan down, brother. No,
go ahead. But yeah, so my lessons
really
would all.
She really wants to keep her job.
Yeah, I don't want him in charge. I'm already doing this.
They would all be recorded, and some of them.
That makes sense, but I mean, like, sometimes I've noticed there's been situations where I've been in a class and maybe because of the students around me who have gotten the lesson, I've been quiet and I've just accepted it. I'll go home and I'll take the book and I'll have to study and I'll have to figure things out. And it's not hard for a teacher to turn around and say, that kid knows it, that kid knows it, that kid's way off in left field. And so when there's situations where they'll be doing homework, there'll be more time spent with that one kid just in that little minute to try to boost him back up to where he's supposed to be. A slight thing that comes to mind was in college. I almost missed an entire class because one of my teachers, well, they weren't very good. But the next teacher down the line recognized that half the class didn't understand it and then spent an extra half hour every single class to teach us the previous class as the next class got talked to us. That's invaluable.
Yeah,
that's maybe one thing that maybe isn't addressed in my system, although they could just – if it's on a three –
they could still go back to previous lessons.
Yeah.
I mean, that is kind of nice. I could be like, well, I didn't get something last week and see that lesson that went through.
And the other thing I thought of is if it's on quarterly semesters, you wouldn't have to hold a kid back by a whole year. You could hold him back for one particular lesson 3 months. So there wouldn't be the stigma of, okay, you're repeating the second grade.
Sure.
It could be, you're repeating this three-month section of algebra, middle school algebra, you know.
That part's kind of nice.
So I hate to break this to you, Tom, but I think the system already exists.
There might be something similar.
It's called Khan Academy. Have you heard of it?
The guy who makes the YouTube lectures with the fake whiteboard. I don't know how his actual academy works. But.
Well, kids have to do it and they don't get to move forward until they've reached a certain percent. And then if they get enough wrong, they have to go back and redo it.
Does he teach all the lessons though?
I think he does. I don't know because they've got a lot of different subjects. So I don't think they do.
I don't think he teaches all the lessons, but I think Tom's right in this one. He does teach the majority. He started the website. I've been on Khan Academy a couple times. He does teach a large subset of them. It's kind of neat that you can go back and see your previous lessons and that shares and aspects of what Tom's talking about.
But now let me emphasize before we go, we got about 10 minutes left, I think. Yeah. So I emphasize the value of competition. And I have a couple non-education examples of competition and how it can revolutionize something. And one of them is martial arts. So before MMA came out, there were all these individual martial arts like Taekwondo, karate, kickboxing, whatever. And they all claimed to be the best, and they all had these, like, guru guys who claimed that they could do almost supernatural things, like get somebody to faint when they stare them down, or that they could, like, catch a tree that's coming down, or they have these weird, like...
I've done those things.
Yeah, I was going to say, I want that fainting when I stare at someone that'll come and really help.
They can pull their heart out. Like, they can pull their heart out and, like, all these weird things. But and then MMA came out, and all these different disciplines had to compete against each other. And you found out.
What's MMA? I'm sorry.
Mixed martial arts.
Okay, thank you.
So then you got to see what was really good and what really was total BS. And if you took...
The heart beating thing, is that total BS?
No.
Well, actually, they don't...
To the unskilled, yes.
That one might not be testable through MMA because it's probably against the rules to try.
The still beating heart of your fallen foe.
I don't know.
But they allow them to do pretty extreme things like snap arms and things, I believe.
But no beating heart.
No beating heart.
You can take this guy's arm and break it in three, but leave his heart intact.
But like...
That seems legitimate.
without competition and evidence, any topic is susceptible to falling into stagnation and getting full of BS claims that aren't tested. I think K-12 education is an example of that. And my other example.
So, teachers are like nice competitive though. Like we don't get compensated for what we do, but if we're better than other teachers, but we decidedly get bragging rights, and that's worth a lot. That pride's worth a lot.
I bet you if you guys were pulling hearts out, that'd be even sweeter.
That would be pretty awesome, yeah. That'd be
no one would mess around in that.
I'm just telling you.
Yeah, I know. Easiest classroom management ever.
So my other example of competition is YouTube makeup tutorials. I saw like a news article about YouTube makeup tutorials, and there's all these teenage girls who are making these tutorials, and they've mm-hmm. like revolutionized like what can be done with makeup. Like I saw an article about a woman who painted her chest with makeup to make her breasts look 2 sizes bigger. And
do you have a link to that?
Yeah, I do, actually. I don't have it written down. But
yes, I need that for my...
I was blown away by that. And it's like...
And so shall we when you give us this link.
My thought about that was it probably looks good if you're looking straight at her, but probably not from the side. So if she's like at a party and she's trying to attract a significant a mate, like a guy, she'll have to like, as he's walking around the room, she'll have to like keep herself so she's looking straight at him. So she'll have to like walk sideways and like, so he's always looking at her chest from straight.
Honestly, thought you were going to talk about the 72 layers of fingernail polish that women are doing, but there was a tutorial on it.
Anyway, there's some makeup tutorials. They can make a person look totally like almost like a different person, change the cheekbones and the looks of the facial structure. And it's really amazing. And it's like these makeup companies had all the financial incentive in the world to teach people how to do that, to sell more makeup. But without competition, it just didn't happen.
So the question...
So even... the financial incentive of capitalism isn't always enough. You need that competition there to really, in the feedback, in the winner take all, but the competition really makes a difference as to the quality of the thing. So in my system, the competition is built into the system. It's a core part of the system.
So my question, though, is in the makeup tutorial – they aren't getting – I mean, eventually people monetize their YouTube channels, but they're not getting paid initially. They have to first get a following and first be awesome at what they're doing, and then they get the following. So I think that's one of the inherent problems with your system is that people aren't – like, you've got to make awesome teachers first, and then they can start selling those.
Well, they're taking – they're watching what other people are doing, even if they're new, and they're building on top of that.
Yeah, but we already do that.
Yeah.
There's this great site called...
If you really, really care, you do. But again, you're not getting as good of feedback because you're not getting the scientific test results back.
There is this...
And you're not watching other lectures of the exact same topic. And you're not... Go ahead.
No, it's okay. I see what you're saying. There is this great website called Teachers Pay Teachers where we all post our favorite lesson plans that have been successful in the classroom. And it's all of our favorite places to go and find new lesson plans because they're well vetted. And then it's also an incentive to make really great lessons.
See, I like that.
Is we put them all on Teachers Pay Teachers. It's an awesome website. And that's one of the things I love about it is that something I do every day. I have to spend an hour editing it, and then I can put it up on Teachers Pay Teachers and get some money.
But yeah, you could do a similar thing within my system. Like companies, there could be companies that just sell graphics to other companies that make lessons plans, like little snippets of teaching materials. And so there'll be a whole economy based on this. There'll be the company that does the lessons, the presenter of the lessons, the people who make the graphics, the people that analyze the lesson plans to see which ones the company should tackle, the statisticians who analyze the test results, the companies that come up with the curriculum, and
all those things happen in education now.
Yeah.
I'm just having a hard time getting on board with you firing all of the teachers. That's kind of how you started this. So I have every incentive to be like, no.
Every selfish incentive.
Yeah, and every, like...
I think she's entitled to that. That's her job.
Yeah, it's my job, and it's my expertise. Like, this is what I do.
I'm still trying to figure out the $10 an hour tutors. Or not tutors, but the monitors. You know, yeah, you vet them and all of that, but, like, do they have to have any, like, a scintilla, a modicum of educational experience? Or do you just say, hey, this guy... can be within 500 feet of the school, so bring them in. You know what I mean.
There are people in schools who do have that type of job, and they, like all people who are low paid for the work they do, don't.
They're
care
not going to shovel right because
their
they're looking at people above them, the monitors, and now you've created this this hierarchy. You know where they're like, well, I'm just a monitor, and you're a tutor, and you make 8 times more than I make. I'm not going to put that much effort into it. You know what I mean? I think if you have everyone that has, well, similar pay scales, and they have a little more skin in the game, that they'll treat it with much more.
Yeah, I do my monitoring job at the same intensity I do my teaching job because I get paid the same amount to do both.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that
the monitor doesn't need to do much. I mean, they could say they could lie about the attendance. So I didn't take attendance. Oh, Johnny just ran out of the school and he's running through some cornfield and he didn't record that.
Where do you live?
Well, we had that when I was a kid.
I'm just a regular
guy. You just watch out of the window, and a kid would be running down a cornfield, and then a teacher would run after them.
My next job could be in a different field. So a monitor could be on a totally different path. Like you could hire a guy just doing a $10 an hour, thinking they're going to go into, I don't know, culinary arts, and they don't ever want to work hard to become the tutor because that's not where they want to go. Period.
Yeah, we have some really terrible subs that are just doing time.
Right,
oh my gosh,
and that's what I'm saying. There's no skin in the game for them. So it's just like I don't care if this kid really gets it. I'm just here to kind of make sure they're doing something that
appears
that right. It resembles them learning.
Did the kids
and
murder?
I'm going to push it all off on the tutors. You know, at my level, I'm just telling you. You know, I'm just
Okay,
that's in between being on fries and being the manager. You know, that's the difference.
So I'm going to close this off. So this is, I think, the only system that has probably that has competition built in. And I talked about the value of competition as continued improvement and evidence based statistics built in. I don't think any other system has that. It also has. It's the only system that I know of that provides equal quality education to all groups of people, regardless of income, because they're all getting the same multimedia lessons. Obviously, there's issues where, okay, maybe the tutors aren't good, is good in the poor neighborhood. The family life might not be ideal, but
those are huge issues.
Yeah, I mean, I can't solve the world, but I can provide them the.
You poke that stick in that bee's nest.
Equal access to the lessons is a huge, huge step that probably nothing else even comes close. Sure. And it's built into the system. I mean, so there's been like financial incentives to try to get like good teachers to move to poor neighborhoods and teach there, but they're fighting against the tide because there's no economic system for them to stay there. Once the economic grant runs out, and they still might not want to live in the ghetto or in Podunk, Iowa, where they're needed. So they're fighting against the tide to get the good teachers there. There is no fighting against the tide. The poor kids get the best educational materials just like everybody else, and it's built into the system. There's no need to try to fight against the tide. It's just built in. And let's wrap it up with that.
Sounds good.
Thanks for coming, you guys. That
Please
was creativity wasted. There's no chance of this ever going into effect.
Thank God.
Unless Trump takes over. No, just kidding.